This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Those players you just named, and especially Bryant, I mean, you know, you could put Bryant probably anywhere on the field except behind the plate. And, you know, that's huge. As you put your roster together, versatility becomes important. And I know I'm repeating myself, but I don't care for the DH game, but that seems to be the direction we're going in. If you're going to play with a DH, to me, you don't need many bench players. You need a catcher, and you need a couple more guys. That's it. You don't need four, five, six bench players. Your regulars should be out there every day, and you have a great player, like you say.
That's the voice of former Cubs manager Jim Riggleman talking Cubs baseball earlier this week on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Hi, everyone. Zach Zapin with you until 5 o'clock, moments away from talking Cubs with Len Casper of Marquee Sports Network here on The Score. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Yes, there will be a DH in the National League, and if you wanted to create a Wikipedia page for a prototypical National League designated hitter, wouldn't you include a picture of Kyle Schwarber? But you know what? It's not that simple. I think even though Kyle Schwarber is that image that you have of what a DH should look like, I think David Ross is going to be a little bit more creative than that, and you could use the DH as a way of rotating players in and out of the lineup. It's a way to get Albert Almora Jr. and Ian Happ some extra at-bats. It's a way to give Wilson Contreras a rest from behind the plate and put Victor Caratini back there, but yet you still can take advantage of Contreras with a hot bat. It's a chance to perhaps allow the newcomer Steven Souza Jr. to get a chance to hit if you don't put him out in the outfield. So there's some flexibility that I think the new manager of the Cubs, David Ross, will have when it comes to the Cubs. And speaking of Chris Bryant, he's scheduled to be the leadoff hitter in 2020. And that was such a weakness for the Cubs in 2019. As a team, the numbers from the Cubs in the leadoff spot, 212. As a team, that was the batting average, an on-base percentage of 294 and a slugging percentage of 383. Chris Bryant last year, 147 games. He was kind of banged up, remember, with the knee for most of the second half. He hit 282 last season, 31 home runs, 77 RBIs, a 385 on-base percentage and a 516 slugging percentage. So if he just does that, and that was with him being banged up last season, that's a dramatic improvement in the leadoff spot from what the Cubs had in 2019. The other big issue is at second base, where last year as a team, the Cubs hit 220 with 23 home runs, 81 RBIs, a 301 on-base percentage, and a 383 slugging percentage. So I think the way Jason Kipnis, the former Cleveland second baseman, was looking in spring training 1.0, if he can keep that going in training 2.0 and into the regular season, it's a dramatic improvement at second base. You know, the way Nico Horner played at the tail end of last season, if he can build on that and you see him a little bit at second base, that's a plus. Let's see what Ian Happ can do. He worked a ton during his minor league stint last season at making himself a better hitter. He was having a pretty good spring. So let's see how that manifests itself once the regular season gets underway. You know, I was looking back. The Cubs were 34-26, tied with Milwaukee after 60 games last year. That was the second best record in the National League behind the 41-19 Dodgers. A lot to discuss as we get ready for what should be a most interesting and unforgettable 2020 for a variety of reasons. And joining us now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park, is a guy I like to call our television friend from Marquee Sports Network, Len Casper. How you doing, Len?
Hey, Zach. I'm good. I would love to say happy opening day, but I guess we've got to wait a few weeks for that. And it looks like it is upon us.
Yeah, I just hope that from a health standpoint that we can get there, because the way the country is going, there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees to get to opening day. There are no guarantees that even if we're able to start that we can finish. But that's part of the unique challenge of this season. The other, I think, from a broadcasting standpoint, is going to be calling games, Len, unlike you've ever done in your career. No fans in the stands, road games from a monitor, nowhere near the actual stadium where the game is being played in. What do you anticipate being your biggest challenge?
Well, I do think no fans in the stands is pretty significant. And, you know, when you have fans, you just assume that's the way it always is. And then when you do a game in Pittsburgh, for instance, or really even at Wrigley, a 7 o'clock start, let's say, and then in about the seventh inning, let's say April baseball, right? So school night, and it rains for 3.5 hours, and you've got two or three innings to go, and you resume the game at about 12:35 a.m. That's what it's like. Typically, there are a few hundred fans left in the ballpark. You can hear almost every word uttered from the stands and on the field, and it's different, right? And that's probably the best comp for something we are used to. You have to supply your own energy as a broadcaster, and quite frankly, I think the players have to do the same for their performance on the field. I think there are a lot of guys who do feed off the fans and off the energy in the ballpark. So I'll be curious to see how it affects the quality of play, if at all. And you hope it doesn't affect the quality of the broadcasts. It will definitely sound different. The opportunity we have on both television and radio is to hear some things from the playing field that normally you cannot hear. And it'll be interesting, and I'll be curious to kind of listen in on how that sounds. There'll probably be a few bad words that we're going to hear. I think we'll have a disclaimer at the top of every telecast. Probably should do the same on radio as well. It's just kind of part of the deal when you have microphones now on the field and no fans in the stands. So it's unique, it's different, it's wild, and let's embrace it.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point that you make. What type of conversation are you most interested in hearing? I'm talking about conversations that maybe take place from the opposing dugout to the pitcher on the mound, the back and forth with an umpire, maybe the way the players communicate in terms of positioning. Which one of those conversations are you most intrigued at being able to hear this year?
My guess is, Zach, there won't be as much heckling between teams. I think it was easy to do with fans in the ballpark. You can, you know, yell at a guy, try to get a pitcher off his game. I think now that you're exposed a little bit publicly, that could be a little trickier to do. I do think guys are going to still yell at umpires because you get caught up in the moment, and that's just the way it is. So, you know, David Ross, Joe Maddon, Derek Shelton, Craig Counsell, not liking a particular call, or a catcher kind of giving a look to the dugout, I think we're going to hear managers screaming at umpires, you know, where was that? You know, come on, let's go. And you're going to hear the umpire reply in kind. So that part will be always kind of fun. Beyond that, I just think, you know, a catcher maybe yelling out to his infielders. A lot of this stuff ends up being much simpler than we think, and I'm sure you found that on the sidelines for NFL games as well. When you see players and coaches and officials and umpires talking to one another, but you don't know exactly what they're saying, you can only see it, I think we build it up in our minds that it's something super secret or there's a lot of jargon involved. And as you know, most of the time it's keep the ball down. Hey guys, two outs. You know, make sure you tag before you head to the plate. Stuff like that, right? And I think that's fascinating. And we were miking up players a little bit on Marquee during spring training, and essentially that's all it was, just little reminders, how many outs there are. We're down three, so don't, you know, if make sure the ball gets all the way past the catcher. If he drops it, don't run. Very simple instructions from base coaches, things like that, and that's kind of cool.
Talking Cubs with Len Casper here on The Score. So is there a different way that, from a TV standpoint, you can present this type of baseball than in the past because of the uniqueness of what's going to be happening this year?
Well, I think there are two answers to that. The first one is I do think there are going to be opportunities to have more voices in the mix, and Marquee Sports Network, in its first year, we were going to do that anyway. So there are chances, you know, spots to take some chances and to do some other things and add some elements that we normally wouldn't have had in previous years, and I'm excited about that. We would have done that anyway, but I do think there is a fine line where you don't want to make it a talk show. The game is still paramount, and in fact, the game action is even more important than in a typical year because the games count for so much more. If you just do the math, you know, every win is worth 2.5 in a 162 game schedule, and you know, one loss kind of equals 2.5 losses. So you never want to kind of take away any of the focus from what's happening on the field. And I do think there is a comfort in hearing baseball described and broadcasted the way people are used to hearing. And then the other answer to the question is the road games, and we will be doing them like you guys from Wrigley Field. So, you know, not actually being in the ballpark when the Cubs are on the road, we hope to possibly have Taylor McGregor, our sideline reporter. She might end up traveling. I don't know the answer to that yet, but it would be nice to have some eyes and ears at the ballpark itself. But that's going to be a challenge for us to not be on site. I've never called a game from a studio or from another location, and I'm looking forward to the challenge. Why not? It's something I've never done. I've never done the recreations like they did back in the 30s, and I look forward to what that'll sound and feel like. I do think, Zach, fans will give us the benefit of the doubt and understand that it is a unique circumstance, and in some ways it might be trickier for you guys on radio, just because you need to be able to see as much of the field as you possibly can. And, you know, just watching a monitor, sometimes you don't get all of those details.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I was reading about how President Reagan used to call Cubs games in Iowa on WHO off of what was called ticker tape. Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. And there were times where the ticker tape would go down and you'd have to wait a little bit of time until it restarted and you were able to get the game action from wherever the game was being played. And in order to buy himself some time, all of a sudden, you know, a beautiful sunny day would turn into a day where all of a sudden you had some clouds in the sky and a surprising quick shower would take place, or you'd have a situation in which a guy fouled off 15 balls before the next pitch was finally put in play, stuff like that. I don't think we're going to have to buy that kind of time with the modern technology that we have. Now, speaking of modern technology, I was using YouTube the other day to watch that documentary on the Cubs channel on the Sandberg game. And one of the things that struck me is the different style of baseball that was played in 1984 than today. You know, you think of the Sandberg game and you think of those home runs and back-to-back innings off of Bruce Sutter. But to me, what stood out watching the highlights from that documentary is the fact that small ball was being played. It's the reason the Cubs were able to get back into the game after the Cardinals built up a big lead. And I wonder, in a shortened season where you have essentially a playoff to get into the postseason, and it's not a marathon, it is a sprint from a baseball standpoint, do we see a change in the approach to the game where you don't use and rely as much on analytics as baseball has relied on the last few years, where you wait for Powerball, but you play almost postseason-like games during the regular season where there is an extra emphasis paid to moving people over, hitting and running, stealing bases, doing the little things to put yourself on top. Do you think that we're going to see a change like that this year?
It's a great question. I ultimately don't know the answer, but I would say with the universal DH, I would tend to think not. I do think in the National League with pitchers, you know, you have moments and spots in the lineup where you would think about bunting guys over. I don't think a ton of guys are really, really good at it. If you look at the Cubs roster in particular and said, who are the five best bunters on the team, without even really thinking too deeply about it, Zach, I would probably say at least three of those top five are pitchers, right? So you might use those guys as pinch hitters to lay down a bunt, but, you know, Baez occasionally will bunt for a hit. Rizzo will do it against the shift. Schwarber occasionally tries it in those spots where they're overshifting to the right. But not a lot of guys do it, and, you know, they tend to want to hit the ball a long way and put it in the air. So my gut tells me that it won't fundamentally change how teams attack this. I will be as curious as anyone to see how David Ross utilizes his DH. I don't think it'll be one guy. I do think because it is a sprint, most teams will probably shuffle a position player in and out of that spot, kind of give them a half day off. But it's a great question. You never know. And, will small ball become a part of the extra innings package with a runner at second to start the inning? Does the opposing team walk the first batter to create a force play at third? You might be more willing to do that if you're the road team and you know exactly what the score is. You know, if you're the home team and you walk that first batter in the top of the 10th, now you could be possibly staring at a really big inning, which is the last thing you want, to be down four or five runs, because that runner at second in that situation in the bottom of the 10th doesn't mean nearly as much. So that strategy, I think, could change a little bit, and you could see some more small ball. But in regulation, I'm not so sure we're going to see a ton of it.
Talking ball with Len Casper here on The Score. This is what I miss, by the way. Being quarantined the way we have, I miss having these discussions in person. This is no different than the kind of conversation we would have after a game over a mind-enhancing refreshment where we just talk ball, and you know, the next day you might get the take of a player or a coach who would be in that situation. I think that's what I miss the most about this setup, where we're not going to have the immediate access to guys that we normally would over the course of a real season.
No, you're right. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking about the Sandberg game, how many closers today would be allowed to give up those two home runs? You know, I would say zero, right? I don't think there's any pitcher today who would give up a game-tying home run in the ninth, and then nine batters later in extra innings would face that same hitter. It's just not the way it works. So, you know, those are things that you look back and you marvel at, that Bruce Sutter was allowed to throw that many pitches and face that many hitters. But back then, that's what closers did. They would go two, three innings. You just don't see it anymore.
No, you don't. And I think the other thing that sometimes, and you kind of hit on this a little bit earlier, you know, I mentioned small ball and you automatically think bunting a guy over. But I'm merely talking about sacrificing an out, which I don't think gets done as much this season. And when I say sacrificing an out, I don't mean on a sacrifice bunt, just, you know, putting the ball in the air, hitting the ball on the ground the other way so you can move a guy over, being happy with a sacrifice fly that brings home a run, hitting and running, which we don't see nearly as much of today as we did, I think, back then. That's kind of what I was talking about.
I still don't think we're going to see a lot of that. I do think we'd see it in the 10th, the idea of a runner at second, and if they face that first hitter, especially if he's a left-handed batter, to pull the ball to the right side. Yeah, absolutely in that spot. I just don't think most hitters look at general game situations these days quite like that. And especially in the shift, you know, I think they're trying to hit the ball over the infielders and not necessarily give up an out for a base gained. Runner at third, a little different, but I still think most teams are going for the big inning. And the other thing, Zach, is the wind at Wrigley typically blows in for the first 2 months in April and May. Well, we're going to start the season in late July. So we could have days where the wind is just howling straight out, and you're looking to score at 8 or 9, not 2.
Yeah, all of a sudden, then it becomes home run derby. By the way, out of all the new wrinkles that baseball is adding for this season, what do you like, what don't you like?
I don't like the runner at second. I understand it. I would rather have had a 12-inning cap and the game ends in a tie, which actually could have worked out. Ironically, ties could have helped break ties for a wild card spot. You know, if a team finishes, you know, a half game behind another team with that extra tie or whatever, it actually could have helped. But I don't think there was a big appetite to add ties to the situation. The people who argue with me about a tie, they say, I don't want to pay a lot of money and go to the ballpark and then 3.5 hours later find out the game ended in a 4-4 deadlock. And my answer is, well, you can't go to the ballpark anyway. That's the point. But having said that, it will create some extra strategy that I'm interested in seeing. I'm not excited about the DH, but I do like that the rules will be universally the same. We don't have American League and National League presidents. We don't have AL and NL umpires. The only difference between the leagues was the pitcher batting versus the DH. And with each team playing a third of its schedule against the other league, I think it just makes sense to have the rules be applied equally.
Len, can you do me a favor and stick around for another segment? Because I want to talk about the actual Cubs team when we come back on the other side. Thank you very much. Len Casper, the TV voice of the Cubs, comes up next with more Cubs talk. I'm Zach Zaidman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That was really fun.
Whew!
Zach Zaidman with you until 5 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We talk White Sox with Bill Melton coming up just after the top of the hour. Now talking Cubs for segment number 2 with our good friend Len Casper. And Len, I had an opportunity to listen to something that you do every single week with JD, a podcast that's called Open Concessions. And this week you interviewed former Cubs pitcher Kerry Wood. And all I'm going to say is, if you're listening out there and you haven't heard it, I would download it, because there is a great Kerry Wood Lou Piniella shower story. Need I say more?
No, I think that you teased it properly. Woody had some really interesting managers, including Dusty Baker and Lou Piniella. And there was a little bit of a misunderstanding, I believe, in Pittsburgh. And it's a quintessential Lou story. He was not afraid of conflict. He would let it go. He wasn't afraid to have arguments with people. And he was very old school in that regard, and loved being around him.
Right, and just the way Woody goes about telling the story is fantastic. It's a must listen. The podcast is called Open Concessions with Len and JD, available wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, let's talk about the 2020 Cubs, because in 2019, there were several weaknesses that stood out. Obviously, the bullpen and the inability to consistently close out games cost the Cubs in big-time fashion, late in the year especially. But over the course of the season, the inability to get consistent play from the leadoff spot and at second base really hurt them. Now, you had a brief opportunity to look at the 2020 Cubs in spring training 1.0. What did you learn about those areas of the game in terms of whether or not the team will be better in those areas this year?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a tough one to answer in spring training. I would say, Albert Almora Jr., who admitted he had a real bad year last year, his new batting stance, I thought showed some improvement. I thought Ian Happ kind of continued what he did to finish up in September of 2019. So it feels to me like center field is in pretty good shape. Jason Kipnis, if he's healthy, I think will be on this club and probably will be in somewhat of a platoon with either David Bote and or Nico Horner. Horner, as you remember, was really impressive when he showed up in San Diego. And I don't think he would have made the opening day roster, Zach. I think he would have gone out of AAA Iowa to start this season, but now with the unique circumstances, I'd be really surprised if he's not a part of the 30 member group that begins the year. So they've got some options now at second base. And in terms of the leadoff spot, it's by far the boldest move made by the first year manager David Ross, and he announced it very early on in camp that Chris Bryant will be the leadoff hitter with Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez right behind him. I think it creates a lot of RBI chances, in particular for Baez. I would imagine Kyle Schwarber will anchor the cleanup spot many days. It's pretty formidable 1-4 when you think about all the success these guys have had. And I thought, you know, Kyle Schwarber basically had the same second half Nicholas Castellanos had. Nick got most of the headlines because he was the midseason acquisition. But, you know, Schwarber, I would say, quietly had a great second half. He wasn't quiet at all, but didn't get as much recognition as he probably deserved. So I really like the look and the flow of this lineup. Steven Souza Jr. will become a really important part of this offense because essentially he replaces Castellanos, and I think with the DH, finds his bat probably in the lineup more often than he would have otherwise. But hey, any lineup where, you know, Wilson Contreras can kind of be lingering down in the 5 or 6 spot, Jason Hayward, who over the last couple of years has come up with some really big hits, maybe in that, you know, 7-8 area, and then Jason Kipnis near the bottom of the lineup too. That's not bad. It really isn't. So I think this offense should score runs. The key, as I see it, Zach, to this season is going to be the health of the starting pitching, because beyond the 5, while they have Alec Mills as probably the long man and essentially the 6th starter if needed, you got to keep the veteran guys healthy. Lester and Quintana looking to have bounce-back years. And you probably need Yu Darvish to be as good as he was in the second half last season for this thing to go where the Cubs want it to go.
You know, and I wonder, having the extended layoff that those veteran pitchers have had, if it actually helps them. Because now when the season gets underway, they won't have to be dealing with the cold weather. It's a lot easier to warm up when the weather is what it is outside right now. So maybe that long layoff actually does help the Cubs starting rotation, where you don't have to have that kind of season-long depth and endurance that you normally would in order to win a division. What about the bullpen, though? Because there have been so many changes made to the pen since the end of last season.
That's a big wild card, because there are going to be a lot of new names, a lot of new faces, and some of the not-so-new faces are still, you would call, unproven, right? The Rowan Wicks and the Brad Wicks of the world, two guys who became incredibly important in that bullpen and got some huge outs. You don't know how they're going to respond in year two, and it can be very mercurial for bullpen arms. They've got some veteran guys they've added, in particular Jeremy Jeffress. I kind of look at him as replacing Pedro Strop in that, you know, veteran right-handed role. But ultimately, the closer is the most important guy, and that's Craig Kimbrel. You would think he would benefit from this type of season, since he kind of had the same year last year. He didn't sign until June. You know he's got a lot to prove in his mind, his second go-around. And then I go back to the energy part of it, right? The idea of one-run game, top of the ninth, you know, Votto, Suarez, Castellanos due up for the Reds, and maybe no fans in the ballpark. And at Wrigley Field in 2019, if that happened, it would be bedlam. It would be a madhouse, and you'd have the music. And I'm sure he'll still have the music that'll intro him when he comes in the game. But that adrenaline he's going to have to come up with based on the game situation and kind of internal, as opposed to the crowd getting him into it. So, you know, maybe it'll help him more than it will the hitters in this situation. Maybe it'll hurt him a little more than the hitters. Nobody knows the answers, and I think that's what's kind of exciting about this, is who will be benefited from this and who won't. And I don't know. I don't know if it'll help or hurt.
Len Kasper's with us talking Cubs. I do think there will be a unique dynamic at Wrigley Field compared to most ballparks because it is inside a neighborhood. And even if you walk around Wrigleyville right now, there are people inside the restaurants and bars. I'm sure there will be people watching the games from the rooftops. Hopefully they're socially distanced and there's a safe number up there. But I do think you will hear some sort of a crowd. It will not be as quiet as, say, some of the other ballparks that the Cubs will visit in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, Dodger Stadium, I mean, it's just a big parking lot. You know, will the Dodgers allow fans to essentially tailgate and watch games, you know, on the big screen or listen to the radio? I don't know the answer to that. But you would think that with the rooftops and just people around the ballpark, outside with their windows open, it might be a slight delay on the cheering. But yeah, no, I do think you're going to hear, you know, car horns honking and things like that, which will be unique and different and wild. But let's face it, you know, it's not the same as 41,000 inside the friendly confines. And, you know, Theo Epstein has said this numerous times already. The one thing he doesn't want his players doing and the team doing, we can do it because we're paid to talk about these things, but he doesn't want comparing. He thinks that's a trap, and I'm with him on that, the idea of constantly bemoaning everything that's different, because once you start doing that, you give yourself built-in excuses for failure, and that's not how this should work. These guys are professionals. Everybody is in a similar situation. So, you know, there's no crying in baseball, and I don't think it'll be allowed this year no matter what happens.
And I think a lot of people, no matter what industry they're in, are learning to deal with it. This is part of the new normal of trying to function within a world where there is no cure for this virus as we sit here today. Len Kasper's with us talking Cubs baseball. All right, what do you think about the schedule? Obviously, we don't know when the Cubs are playing the teams in the NL Central or the AL Central, but we know who they're playing. What advantage, disadvantage do you see? I'm sure you've had a lot of time to think about it and break it down in terms of what the schedule is going to look like this year.
Yeah, I think the teams, the better teams in the Central probably have an advantage over, let's say, teams in the East. I think while the NL Central looks to be pretty good top to bottom and should be incredibly competitive, I do think if you look over in the American League Central, the Royals and the Tigers in particular, on paper, don't look to be playoff contenders, but everybody is, you know, in 2020 with a 60-game schedule for sure. So it could come down to the games against the teams, quote, you should beat. And that is usually the case, right? You know, you go 9-10 against the better teams in your division, and you try to go 14-5 against the teams who are in the second division, so to speak. So I think Minnesota is on paper, you know, they won 101 last year, so don't discount how good the Twins are. I definitely like the White Sox and what they've done in the offseason. They have to go out and prove it. I think the same goes for the Cincinnati Reds, but, you know, Cardinals, Twins, Cubs, Brewers, White Sox, Indians, you know, those are the teams. And you know, you might have to sweep Kansas City, right? That could be the difference between going home or grabbing a wild card spot. It could be that simple. And that's exciting. It's perilous. And that means a one-run game in the ninth inning, you know, in Kansas City in front of no fans in August or September, whenever that series is, could loom very large.
Yeah, they lost 103 games last season, not expected to be much better this year. The Tigers, as you mentioned, lost 114 games last year. They're still rebuilding. And the Pirates nearly lost 100 games last season, and they're a rebuilding team as well. So you have to dominate those teams, I think, if you want to have a real shot at winning the NL Central this year. All right, let's get to the manager, Len, because a lot was made throughout the offseason about the switch, David Ross taking over for Joe Maddon And what you almost always heard, especially during spring training, about Rossi, you know, he's bringing a different kind of edge to the team. And I didn't think much of it then, but considering the type of season that baseball is now going to have, in which you have to have a sprint from the get-go, an edge helps dramatically, I think.
You wouldn't think it would hurt. I complimented him in spring training, and I said, you know, you're you all the time. And that's hard, I think, for a lot of first-year managers. You probably think, okay, I have a different role, a different job. I'm not a player anymore. You know, I need to project something different. He didn't. And I think that speaks very well of him, that, you know, he knows who he is. He knows what his strengths and weaknesses are. And I think he was managerial material when he was a player, so there was no need to change. Now, he will grow into this, and has grown into it, and has admitted that, you know, he likes having a former manager and Andy Green at his side, you know, 6 feet away, as we know. I think he'll wear very well. The one advantage on paper he might have, Zach, is just all of this is new for him. So because he doesn't have a routine as a manager, maybe in a weird way that's beneficial during a season like this. The three-batter minimum rule might be a big pain in the rear end for a lot of managers who've done this for years and years and years and will constantly have to be reminded that they can't go out and make a pitching change. Well, for Rossi, this is the first go-around for him, so he's already, quote, used to that. So I think that'll be one thing to watch and to look for. And I have no doubt he'll get on guys if they need to be reprimanded. I think it is a conscientious group, and I think he sees everything, and I don't think he'll let those things go. I think they'll be addressed immediately. Hopefully there won't be a lot of those moments, right? You know, you'd like to think a veteran group understands what's at stake, and if there's any kind of literal or figurative leaning on guys to do the right thing, a lot of that may come from not baseball, but from all of the other rules involved, the social distancing, making sure that, you know, they don't run into a lot of people in their personal lives. Look, this is not house arrest, but I do think as adults, and there's a lot at stake for this season, for all teams, I think there'll be some stern initial meetings and conversations like, look, the only way this is going to work is if everybody does the right thing. And you would like to think and hope that everybody will do the right thing, while understanding, Zach, that even if everybody does do the right thing, there are going to be some things that are out of their hands and out of our control. But you definitely don't want to, at the end of the day, regret, you know, walking across the street to a convenience store to pick up a bottle of shampoo, and all of a sudden you get COVID. So, you know, that's going to be difficult, I think, when guys are on the road to not be able to leave their hotel room other than basically go to the ballpark. But that's what's at stake.
Yeah, and that's where I think having good peer pressure from inside the clubhouse, and that's where the players police each other, and having leaders like Jason Hayward and John Lester in that clubhouse, I think are key. And in terms of Rossi being that type of guy, you would like to think that they will cut down on running into more outs than any team in the majors, as they did last season, and the fielding miscues where they had the third most errors in baseball last year. They cut those two things down. They can take advantage of that lineup that you talked earlier, and hopefully around baseball, everyone stays healthy enough where we can not only start but complete what should be a most unique season. Len, thank you so much for sharing some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Look forforward to seeing you at the ballpark, Zach, hopefully soon. I may not recognize you with the mask, but as long as you didn't shave your head, I should be able to spot you in a crowd.
No, I need a haircut, though. That's a good reminder. I definitely need a haircut before the start of the regular season. Stay safe, Len. We'll see you at Wrigley soon.
Let it grow while you got it.
I don't think I'm losing it. That's the magic. It's as though someone was playing a unique trick on me, where we'll give you hair, you'll never go bald, but it's going to be the kind of hair that very few people on planet Earth have, and that's the magic of being me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.